8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website, www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. You can also listen live on your Nokia phones now. Go to the website for details. Tonight, we are honored to have with us an incredible young man, Son of Nun. Son of Nun is a former Baltimore, Maryland teacher, rapper, activist, cancer survivor. His music has themes of social relevance and conscience on many matters: New Orleans, education, Palestine, the peace movement, anti-death penalty, social injustice, among many others. The name Son of Nun is a biblical reference to the one who took over where Moses left off. Son, hello. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me on. How you doing?
Doing great, thank you. Really excited about having you here tonight. I'd like to talk to you about some of the work that you've been doing. One of the things that I found when I was doing the research and preparing for the show, Son, was that I had found something that I didn't know about the Maroons, in this, which is an interesting part of your heritage. Can you tell us a little bit about the Maroons?
I'd love to. Maroons. Basically, when the Spanish left Jamaica, they freed the slaves because the British were coming in. And when the British came in, they could not capture those slaves. They went off into what's called the cockpit country, which is a very rugged interior in the Jamaican landscape. So basically, the British would send troops up to try and recapture the Maroons. Right, and the name came from the Spanish word cimarron, and later just became Maroons. And basically, the Maroons fought off the British to a treaty. Right, the British had to sign a treaty in order to prevent getting their asses kicked on a regular basis through guerrilla warfare. So the treaty,
as opposed
the Maroons
to an irregular basis.
Yeah, and the Maroons basically gained some autonomy, and there are actually other instances of Maroon communities, autonomous Maroon communities, free slave communities, from Mexico all the way down to Brazil, where basically the colonial regimes of the time could not capture these people, right? So that type of resistance is definitely something that I'm proud to have in Jamaican heritage, which is where my people are from.
They actually ended up becoming free men sooner than the slaves here in the United States, which again, doesn't impress me about what's happening in America these days. Let me ask you, your messages are so powerful. You made a statement that just blows me away every time I think about it. If you don't get it, you don't get it.
Right.
Son, I love that. Why do you think so many people just don't get it when it comes to the issues that you are fighting to get out there?
Well, I do want to say that I think that there is a significant number of people who do get it. You know, I definitely don't always feel like I'm, spitting in the wind, so to speak. You know, but I will say that it's not a coincidence that the majority of people don't get it, because the time that I spent as a teacher in Baltimore City, basically I can remember looking at the curriculum for the history courses that I've been hired to teach, and basically for world history, for example, the end goal of the curriculum was to quote unquote justify, right, America's position as a superpower in the world today, right? Literally justify, not question, not understand, but justify. So if that's the position that people are being educated from, then of course, right, alternate explanations of of how things were done, how the U.S. gained the power that it has today, are going to seem foreign, right? Because that's not what's being perpetuated by the media outlets that people listen to, right? So, I mean, that's why I think that a lot of people don't get it, you know? But mm-hmm. I also think that there's movements afoot, right? so that people can challenge that status quo, you know? And that's what I'm happy to be a part of, you know?
How did, you know, when we first came on, we were streaming some of your music in our virtual auditorium. One of the things that we find that here, and I don't know if you're aware, but I am Palestinian by heritage and ancestry. How did you come about the song Free Palestine?
Basically, I'd done some work with different political groups and came across the issue. You know, like when you look at the way that the media portrays the conflict going on in Palestine, it can be very confusing, right? It can seem, and people usually draw the conclusion, well, it's the Holy Land, it's two different religions, those people will never get along, and that's just going to be the way that it is. And the Palestinians are terrorists and the Israelis are innocent, you know. And the more that I did work with these groups and that the issue came up and I had more education on it, the more I realized how uneven the scales were. And it just, it incensed me, you know, to see the parallels between apartheid in South Africa, right, to see the parallels between the way that African Americans are treated here in the United States, you know, like just it all came together for me in my mind, and I realized, you know, solidarity is the key, and I say that a lot in my performances and things like that, because until people actually take the time to learn about the way that this group and the other group is being affected by oppression, then we're all going to keep being consistently divided and conquered, right? So taking on the perspective of a Palestinian wasn't hard to do because oppression is not something that I'm unfamiliar with, right? And I don't think it's something
Absolutely.
That many people are unfamiliar with. So that's where it came from, you know, and just wanting to speak out about the issue and give it some credence in the form of hip-hop, you know, which is the way that I'm coming at it.
Well, I think it's wonderful. One of the statements that you make, and I thought it was very powerful, was long live the freedom fighters of the Intifada, fighting for freedom today because there might not be a tomorrow.
Right.
You know, again, I think that as an activist myself, I understand that sentiment. It seems that many times we always put off till tomorrow what we should have done today. And here
right.
you are with your history, with your abilities, with your you're an activist, you're a teacher. Let me ask you, how do you teach young children, knowing how history has been distorted, how it has been altered, how it has been and how many schools and historically have miseducated children when it comes to the issues of history. How do you teach them truth?
Well, let me say one thing before I begin to answer that question. I'm no longer a teacher. I taught for 4 years in Baltimore City schools. I taught at the high school level and taught U.S. history and world history and government, but primarily U.S. history. And when I was teaching, the reason why I came into teaching was because I came across the works of people like James Mullen, right? Lies My Teacher Told Me. I came across Howard Zinn, you know, People's History of the United States. It was just inspired, you know, by that work and said, this is actually something I want to help put out there, you know? And so what I would do is actually, to a degree, you know, you have to kind of close your door and teach sometimes. But I would follow the curriculum, but I would supplement it with books like passages from a people's history or passages from lies my teacher told me. And what I would usually do at the beginning of the year is, before we would even start looking at the textbook, I would go through James Nolan's explanation of it and how the textbook got to the classroom, right? The textbook adoption process, and kind of just opening the door to questioning, right? So kind of being like, well, why is it this textbook and why is it not another one? And then we look at the textbook itself, right? And I remember the world history textbook that we had, it had several pictures on the front, some with white people, some with people from different races and ethnicities. And what struck me the most was that only the white people had names, right? The people of color were all a Japanese man, right? Like a black, an African chief or something like that. But only the white people actually had names as well as titles. You know, so I was kind of like asking the kids about that. Like, what do you think about that? Why is that the case? And what do you think the rest of this book is going to be like based on what's on the cover, right? So that's kind of the approach that I would take, you know, supplementing the curriculum with actual factual knowledge, you know, subversive information that's only subversive because it's the truth, right? Because the textbook would often leave things out, you know, would be guilty by omission. So that's the approach that I took when I was teaching.
You bring up a very interesting something that's very dear to my heart when you talk about that critical thinking, that introduction of the opposing opinion to children. I think that's so powerful. I, for one, as a parent, thank you for doing that, even at the time that you did do it. Racism, Trent Lott. Mm-hmm. Now that's a song title, folks. For those of you that are listening, Trent Lott is a song title in I believe it's Blood and Fire. Is that that's the one that was boy.
That's right.
It's like, let me ask you something, son. Is it dangerous to speak out like that?
I don't know if they started tapping my phone or anything like that since then, but what I do know is that whenever I would perform that piece, it was always to a lot of respect and applause. So the folks who I was performing for definitely were on the same page where that was concerned. Also at the same time, I do know that on my internet site, I can kind of check like the different entities that are viewing the page in terms of the different countries and things like that. And for a while, I would see viewings from the U.S. military as well as from the U.S. government. during that time, like when Blood and Fire dropped. So I don't, you know, like I don't know for sure who in the military or who in the government was looking at it, but I you know, it's like I don't put it past any of those folks to. You know, keep an eye on people, you know, especially in the climate that exists today with, you know, civil liberties being shredded, you know, and things like that. So yeah.
Do you see racism growing, son?
Do I see racism growing?
Yeah.
I see racism definitely persisting. You know, I definitely see, like, the interesting thing, the other weekend, I think it was this past weekend, Some racist group was having a convention. It's like a neo-Nazi group is having a convention in Virginia, basically, and there was a protest organized around it. And every you know, once in a while you see groups like this rearing their heads. But I mean, if you look at what happened in China, you know, like over the past year, if you look at the rise of nooses being found on college campuses, you know, it's like all indicators definitely show that, you know, some folks are feeling empowered, you know, to express their racism in explicit ways. But the other thing to consider is also like the institutionalized racism, right? You look at the prison industrial complex. You look at the way that wars are being waged, you know, where you go into the military and you're taught to kill, and one of the methods that they use, part of the training, is to dehumanize your enemy, right? So, yeah, I mean, racism is definitely prevalent. It's definitely growing. I would definitely say that that's true.
Let me ask you, do you think that the music, you know, you have an incredible genre here, and rap music, to me, has always personified the type of music that says something, that delivers a message, that creates and causes change. What do you see it at, and do you see it as evolving from maybe just the street sort of rap that talks about booty and all that stuff, and you know, or do you see it as some kind of a method to reach out to people, and do you hope to see that happen?
I mean, if you look at the music industry, right, you look at, and this is pretty much in general, it's most of the music that you hear on the radio is put out by a handful of companies, like five or six companies or so, right? So if that's the case, then you know that the music that you're hearing is limited, and most of it sounds the same, you know, with like a few exceptions, right? Everybody can point to like Common or Mos Def, right? They're, you know, having their songs on the radio, but there's a stranglehold, you know, that used to not be there. And at one point you could at least hear some kind of balance on the radio in terms of the perspectives that the hip hop was coming from, right? You would have, you know, everything. At one point, you could hear anything from like Kid and Play to Dr. Dre on the radio, right? Or in movies and things like that. But now that balance has been shifted, you know, and it's very lopsided. And you can look back over time and look at the Telecommunications Act of 1996, right? That consolidated media ownership, right? So after that happened, then the quality of the news that you could look at, you know, was impacted as well, because fewer and fewer companies were owning more and more of the information that people had access to, which is kind of why, you know, the internet is just is an amazing thing, you know, and can do things and can open doors for artists and media outlets to keep the truth out there and keep it alive, because you know that you're not going to be able to hear it, you know, on the mainstream channels, right? But in terms of like hip hop having that potential and whether or not it's going to evolve or anything like that, I think that there's a ebb and a flow, you know, just like movements, you know, there's an ebb and a flow to the messages that are going to come out. And I think that as struggle increases, as movements become better organized and become stronger, what you're going to see is more artists reflecting that in the music that they're putting out, you know? And what you might see is companies recognizing that that's a demand and then opening the gates to that. Because right now, a lot of artists, Some artists do see what's going on in the political landscape and are frustrated by it. But the labels that they're signed to only want a specific type of sound to come out of that label, right? The radio is very happy if you're a hip-hop artist and you're talking about killing other black people. That's all fine. But if you talk about challenging the police, if you talk about challenging the president, if you talk about the reason why the ghetto looks the way that it does, then you're going to be relegated to college radio, to public radio, or to internet radio, or something like that, right? So basically, I think that you can't. What's that?
I said it's a natural attraction.
Yeah, you know. So
what you're saying here is, and you have said this before, I'm proud to be in a minority of people that choose to question authority.
I'm proud to be a minority in the minority of people that choose to question authority.
Right? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And tell me, how has that benefited you?
How has it benefited me to be a minority?
Well, to question authority, too, I think you have to take it to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I think how it's benefited me to question authority is that, you know, just like on a personal level, I feel like I've learned a whole lot. You know, it's kind of like when you get that first taste of seeing how things really are. You know, when you take the, I don't know if it's the red pill or the blue pill or something like that, you know, in Alice in Wonderland or the Matrix or something like that. It's kind of like when your eyes are open, you know, it's hard to go back to sleep, you know. So it's empowering, you know, and at the same time it can be very frustrating because, you know, it's not as though once you learn about all of these things, then, you know, automatically all the problems will go away. You know, it's like, no, now it's time to fight and to figure out how can we organize, how can we come together and fight this, you know, and fight for change and fight for equality. And, you know, and that's the thing that can be frustrating, too, about the left. You know, it's like the left is very segregated. The left is very segregated. You know, it's like you, like I said before, you go to anti-war protests and it's mostly white. You go to immigrants' rights protests and it's mostly Latino. You go to police brutality protests and it's mostly black, right? Gina, mostly black, right? So, but it's the same power structure that is being manifest in all these different attacks, right? All these different inequities, all these different situations. So, I mean, in terms of benefit, I think it's definitely enabled me to maintain sanity and inspiration by finding different groups and people who are down for the cause, you know, who stand in solidarity, you know, with making change. So, you know, I feel good about being in that network, you know.
Son, you have an album, Blood and Fire, and it has been received both in the hip-hop community and the activist circles, obviously by your associations on both sides. What was your intention for this album?
My intention, I mean, just to put the word out, you know, that there's another brother in the struggle who's trying to push things forward and who's not, you know, worried about sounding a certain way or anything like that, you know, who just wants to put the issues on the table and try and move forward, you know. And because that, you know, for me, it's kind of like music has always inspired me, you know, like Bob Marley, you know, Peter Tosh, Hendrix, you know, Public Enemy, right? All these groups have always inspired me. And when I felt like, you know, I could contribute to that legacy, then I definitely wanted to stand in line with it, you know, as opposed to against it, and just have something out. Basically, it's like I wanted to make music that I wanted to hear. You know what I mean? And it's like I didn't feel like I was hearing it, so I wanted to put something out. I could either complain about it or I could do something about it. So, you know,
what do you think drives you? What do you think inspires you when you hear of an issue or you hear of a plight or a people that is being oppressed? Is it the association with your own history? Is it anger? What is it that drives you to say, hey, this is the song. This is a song. I need to make it a song.
I mean, learning about the different struggles, like history, you know, and learning about the different peoples and their struggles and seeing that interconnectedness of how, you know, oh, this group had to fight too, you know. Oh, that group encountered opposition by this same group of people, you know, and it was the same group, you know, set of tactics that was used to divide and conquer these people, and the base issues were the same, you know, wanting freedom, wanting to have the opportunity to have a land that they could call their own, wanting to have rights and things like that, you know, it's basically those fundamental things that you can see in all these issues across the board, you know, like wanting to fight injustice, you know, like, so just being a part of those movements here in the U.S., you know, in the Baltimore and D.C. area, you know, just inform my perspective and make me want to be a part of it in some way. And the way that I can be a part of it is, you know, in addition to being an activist and putting the word out about different organizing meetings and protests and things like that, is to, you know, add lyrics to it too, because I'm inspired by that, you know, so... It's the movements bring it out of me.
There was a time when you said that organizing political events was very hard when you were in university, and you would, you know, if somebody were to be asked to see a hip hop group or something, that it would, you know, everybody would come out. But if you ask them to come out for Mutmia or, say, Leonard Peltier, it was like, forget it, dude.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that's changing? Do you think that we are getting more politically savvy, activist savvy? Do you think that we're understanding the associations more as a community of people?
I mean, I think that, like, to be sure... I don't think it's like a walk in the park organizing it on school campuses and things like that. But I also talked to some friends about it, and what they were saying is that, you know, this generation that's coming up now, you know, that's in school now, has you know, essentially come of age at a time when, you know, they can see some of the disparity. They can see the government lying to them. Right, they can see that Iraq was wrong. You know, they can see that, you know, like, something's not quite right. You know, they're coming up at a time when there are people that are actively mobilizing around different issues, and I feel like that's influencing the crop that's coming up right now of young people, because they're living at a time where it's hard not to have an opinion on this or that issue. You know. And then there's students who are very motivated and are organizing other students and, you know, trying to bring an end to the war, trying to bring attention and an end to the occupation of Palestine, right, by having walkouts, by having Palestine weeks, right, like they just had recently at University of North Carolina, and they just had Israeli Apartheid Week in D.C., right, so you see these different events going on, these different organizations coming together, because these conflicts, I feel, are at a point where it's harder to keep them out of the media spotlight, right, for the generation that's coming up now. So it, basically, when I was on the college campus, 9/11 hadn't happened yet, right? So... You know, but what is starting to happen was kind of like the WTO, right? And that was pretty much at the end of my college career, you know? So people were getting politicized around globalization. And then, so that was big. But basically, it's kind of like I was saying before about the way that the movement inspires more radical music. That's the same way that, you know, having organizations, having people getting together and doing things actually will influence, you know, the turnout for different events, the level of consciousness around different issues.
Well, we're going to have to take a break now. This is great. Our guest tonight, for those of you that have just joined us, is Son of Nun. He's a former Baltimore, Maryland teacher, rapper, activist, cancer survivor, all-round incredible human being and something we all could use. When we return, we'll be taking calls from the community and from our listeners. So for anybody that would like to call and ask Son of None a question, our telephone number is 877-489-6350. Toll-free in the United States and in Canada, it's 888-228-4494. Please give us a call. We'll get those numbers back to you on our return, and we're going to take a short break.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on Earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by After Downing Street.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit sosmorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
This land is yours. Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network. Maybe you and me.
Scrolling the freedom fighters of the Intifada, fighting for freedom today, cause there might not be a tomorrow. Scrolling the freedom fighters of the Intifada, fighting for freedom today, cause there might not be a tomorrow. Scrolling the freedom fighters, scrolling the freedom fighters, scrolling the freedom fighters, scrolling the freedom fighters of the Intifada, fighting for freedom today, cause there might not be a tomorrow. Free Palestine.
Welcome back, everybody, to the People Speak Radio Show. Our guest tonight is Son of None, a former Baltimore, Maryland teacher, rapper, activist, cancer survivor. We are thrilled to have you here. You know, we've had a lot of guests on our show, and I was telling you earlier, Son, that many of our guests like our theme song by Annie DeFranco. Now, she's never actually been on our show, but technically she's on every show. Howard Zinn. Howard Zinn was one of my favorites, and one of the things that he said was, do something. Do anything. Just don't do nothing. How does it feel when you read your hero's books and then you meet them and you speak at events alongside of them, like Cindy Sheehan and many of the others?
How does it feel? It feels great. You know, I mean, to be able to add something to an event, you know, that and the purpose of that event is to actually bring attention to and to make change around, you know, the war or racism, you know, in terms of like Gina and things like that, right? So of course, like it feels amazing, you know, it was absolutely amazing. Like seeing Rosa Clemente speak in New York at a hip hop event up there was, you know, absolutely blew my mind. You know, and I was just honored to have been able to share the same space with her, you know, in an effort to try and move things forward. So it's kind of like when I started. Those are the kind of people that I saw myself, you know, or that I hoped to see myself being able to share the stage with and things like that. And, you know, it's like those are dreams and things like that. And you don't really necessarily expect them to occur, you know, for it to happen that way. But basically just coming to a point where it actually happens, you know, is... It just serves to further inspire, you know, and to feel like, okay, maybe I'm doing something right here, you know, and maybe I should keep doing it, you know. So, and especially groups like Iraq Veterans Against the War, you know, when you see a film like Sir, No, Sir, and you learn that history about how the Vietnam War was ended and the role that soldiers played in it, you know, and then today being able to work with an organization who's picking up that mantle and deciding to move things forward in that way, you know, that's inspiring too, you know. And then being here in Baltimore with the Algebra Project, you know, city high school student-led organization that's fighting for adequate funding for their schools. And, you know, it's high school students. These are the kids that actually go to the schools, you know, predominantly black, you know, just an amazing youth organization that's fiery, you know, and that's not going to give up, you know, and getting to help to organize things like that, going to organizing meetings, going to the events that they plan, like the most recent one in Annapolis, you know, where they took the state house steps and were arrested and basically put the governor on the spot. You know, when he was mayor, he said that, yes, the governor should be the one to give you funding. Now that he's governor, he's not saying anything, right? So doing things like that, being a part of those struggles, you know, it inspires me, you know. And it's like,
didn't they call that protest the sorry state of the union? I believe that was... wasn't that the one that they called? I think they called it the Sorry State of the Union protest, and I thought that was just a wonderful name.
The one that the Algebra Project did most recently, that was called CSI Annapolis, right? Based on the shows like Crime Scene Investigation, right? Like the State House, that's the crime scene because they're robbing us all, they're killing our students, you know, and basically. A student, a member of the Algebra Project, was killed in January, coming from a meeting at one of the organizers' homes, and basically the students drew the conclusion, you know, that the person who tried to rob and then killed this other student, basically that was a manifestation of the underfunded school system, right? If you don't have a quality education, you can't get a quality job to sustain you and your family. And if that's the case, then, you know, you don't always look for legal means to get ahead, to get what you need to survive, right? So, you know, like that was an amazing event, and it's just inspiring to be a part of it with those students, you know.
May I ask you how you are feeling about the current frenzied media reaction to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama?
How I'm feeling about the thing is kind of like, okay, you know, yes, either would be historic, right? A first black president or a first woman president, you know, that would be, you know, historic, would be amazing. But at the same time, it's like when you look at their platforms, it's kind of like, well, let me think about this for a second, right? What would the first black president look like on paper, right? What would the first woman president look like on paper, right? The first black president is definitely not going to be like a radical, right? It's not going to be like a panther, right? He's not going to have Mumia's perspective on issues or anything like that, right? And neither would the first woman president, right? Probably not going to be an activist, right? Probably not going to be a champion of equal pay for equal work, right? Or a champion of reproductive rights, you know, equal access for all and things like that, right? So if that's the case, then it's kind of like that's the prism that I see the elections in, you know? And it's like, I'm not going to throw my weight behind basically either one of them, you know? And but at the same time, it's like, I also don't knock people for getting caught up and being inspired by it. My issue is that, you know, I look at it like this. People are voting or are going to vote, you know, for Democrat, you know, in this election for all the right reasons, right? So if that's the case, then it's like, I can't knock them for that. But the other issue is kind of like, well, an election shouldn't be a substitute for grassroots organizing, right? So I feel like that's the perspective that I'm coming at it with, you know, when I look at the elections this year. And honestly, you know, the past elections that I've seen, you know, it's like the real work is actually organizing. You look at 2006, and, you know, when the Democrats swept in, there was an anti-war vote. That was the mandate, and they failed to deliver, right?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that more and more people will see, like, oh, you know, it's up to us to do this. It's up to us to fight and to get anything if we want it to be done, because that's what history has shown. You know, like, that's history. It's not what's in the textbooks that they show you. It's not like, you know, affirmative action happened under Nixon because he was a great friend to the black community, right? He was put in a position where he had to make some kind of concession because you had, right, the different aspects of the civil rights struggle. You had the nonviolent means, and then you also had the self-defense side of it, right? And you also had a huge anti-war movement, right, that was somewhat, you know, like, educated in terms of issues affecting the civil rights movement and all of that. So it's like, at least in my perspective, Nixon was kind of put in a sticky situation where a concession had to be made, you know? So that's the way that I look at it. It's like, organizing is power, you know?
Have you, and you're right, you're absolutely right. I think a lot of people are really voting for party more so this year than at any other time. However, I do see this, you know, I think what I have seen, Sun, is an unsuccessful attempt at sticking in the race card and sticking in the gender card. I think that people have tried to get that motion, get that movement off the ground in a number of different areas, but really have been unsuccessful.
Elaborate.
Well, you know, many people have accused Hillary of trying to use the race card.
Right.
Some people have accused Obama of trying to use the gender card. You know, I don't, and here I'm saying to myself, well, you know, I think they're really pulling at straws here, because I don't find that they have anything to really, really attach themselves to. So their attempts at trying to introduce these racist and bigoted ideas into the election process have really been kind of, you know, failed. They just kind of deflated all by themselves and didn't go anywhere. And people are really looking at, how can we not vote for these people, whoever it is, because this is what we want done in America, and this is what I believe the path of righteousness is more on the Democratic side than it is on the other side.
I mean,
on the Republican side.
Without a doubt, I'm no fan of the Republicans either, you know. And but I'm also not like a lot of African Americans kind of just run into support, you know, blind support for the Democratic Party. I just feel like there's been different examples in the civil rights movement in different periods of time where they've co-opted, you know, ideas from different movements, and then it hasn't always paid off, you know. So while I will admit that there are some, you know, people in the Democratic Party who have done good things, you know, like, I'm not going to say it's a wash, you know, because it's hard to be like always and never when talking about an entire group of people, you know, because it that doesn't always add up. But at the same time, I feel like even if you are a long time, you know, a hardcore supporter of the Democrats, I feel like in this situation, organizing should still be the answer, you know, because you have to hold these people accountable, you know. It's like they come at you with a lot of rhetoric, you know, all campaign season long, you know, and then when they get into office, it doesn't always translate without some type of, you know, movement on the ground to make sure that the issues that they were talking about and claiming to champion don't just evaporate and go away, you know. So that's kind of my take on it, you know.
Thank you. We have a caller on line three, Gay. On line three, Gay, would you have a question for Son of None?
Yes, I do have a question for Son of None. Kevin, I was going to ask you, in doing the different jigs, as I call them, you know, when you're out rapping on the stage and so on, do you actually do stuff to think about get the people thinking about what's going on in Rwanda or in Darfur, and do you talk about or do anything about the election process that's going on now?
That's going on now?
Yes.
In terms of the U.S. election?
Beg your pardon?
Are you talking about, like, the election that's going on now?
Yes, that's what
okay.
She meant.
And as far as issues, because that sounded like a two-part question, in terms of issues on the African continent, I definitely raised that in the music that I have. Even also on the forthcoming album, I talk about that, which is the music that I've been playing out when I do tour right now, you know, raising the issue of debt and poverty and how that is the catalyst for instability and violence, you know, around the world, particularly in Africa, you know, because the crisis there is so great. In terms of this current election, I definitely address those issues too. I have a line in one of the newer songs that's basically like, we got the 8-hour day because of strikes, not because you wrote your congressman and got the right? They could give a goddamn if you're polite, but hit them in the pockets and then with you tonight, right? So basically, I'm trying to address the elections, but also come at it from an organizing standpoint as well, the importance of doing that work.
Absolutely. Thank you. Dennis from Orlando asks a question. Having grown up with Schoolhouse Rock, I realize the power of music to teach. It seems to me that rap also has that kind of power. Have you considered doing something similar to teach kids history?
I mean, in a way, you could say that that's kind of what I'm doing. The difference is, though, that I'm not in the classroom day in, day out doing it, but I do work with young people, and, you know, the time that I do get to do that, you know, a lot of them are on the same page with that too. You know, there's a lot of amazing youth artists / activists that are coming up right now, you know, even like that group that I mentioned, the Baltimore Algebra Project. There's a couple of hip hop groups that their members are involved with, right? The Militant Advocates is one group, and we're doing a benefit with them for the IBAW bus fire, which was torched in January. They're going to be performing in March. And then there's another group, the Sons of Net, that are an amazing group, too. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's like when you're involved in the struggle, that becomes part of your educational process. And if you're an artist at the same time, then that struggle gets reflected in your music as well, you know? So, I mean, in terms of using history as a way to inform young people through music, I mean, that's what inspires me, so that's what I reflect in my music as well. But it's not like, you know, 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue or anything like that, you know. Like, no, I haven't thought about doing it in that way because, you know, I just, like, it's kind of whack, you know. But in terms of just relating it to what's going on now, you know, definitely.
Well, I certainly agree that that you are passing the message. We have another question from Kevin in California. And Kevin asks, how do you feel about the use of profanity in hip-hop music and demeaning attitudes towards females?
Well, I think demeaning attitudes towards females is bullshit. And I think that also, like, sexism, right, misogyny, wasn't invented by hip-hop either, right? A lot of people point to hip-hop and say, oh, it's so sexist and, you know, it's abhorrent. And it's like, well, how about the fact that women make, what, 75 or 76 cents on the dollar, right? You should get all uptight about that, you know, like in this country, because that's ridiculous too. You know, if you want to talk about sexism, you should talk about, you know, like the restricted access to reproductive rights that women face on a regular basis, right? That's upsetting as well. But in terms of it being reflected in hip-hop, yeah, I don't stand for it either, and I think that people should be held accountable for it, you know. In terms of, what was the first part that he mentioned before, the sexism? The meeting added.
Let me see. He wanted to feel what you felt about profanity as well.
Oh, profanity? I mean, I think that profanity definitely has its place. I'm not offended by profanity if it's there because people are talking about a messed up situation that they're dealing with or trying to relay to somebody else how intense those feelings are that they're having, you know? Like, I'm not worried about it, you know? I mean,
let me remind you of some of your own words. Part of hip-hop is putting it all out there, confronting stuff you see as being bullshit. So no apologies. This is Son of None statements on that one. And I have to agree with you. Sometimes the shit is so deep you can't help but step in it.
Yeah. You know, and you got to call it what it is, you know. It's like, that is bullshit. That is bullshit.
And if it smells like bullshit, if it looks like bullshit, if it's bullshit.
Yeah, I'm not going to coat it in sugar, right, and ask you to eat some of it. You know what I mean? It's like, no, you're going to be like, that's bullshit. You know,
that's what it is. And absolutely. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much. You know, we've had a great time. We've had a lot of, and, you know, I have to tell you, it is, you know, it's so refreshing sometimes to step outside of the politically correct world and, like you said, just call bullshit bullshit. It is what it is. It is what it is. Thank you so much for being with us, Son of None. Can you tell us where you're going to be next before we go on to the end of our program?
The next place I'm going to be is on February 29th at MICA. It's going to be an event around hip hop and activism. And then after that, I'm going to be doing stuff with Maryland Case, which is an organization, Maryland Citizens Against State Executions, having a poetry event in Baltimore. And then, of course, Winter Soldier is going to be coming up, and I'm going to be doing performances down there, as well as Stop Loss Congress. So the schedule is packed. Stop Loss Congress on the 10th, Michael on the 29th, Winter Soldier on the 13th through the 16th. So people should definitely keep their eyes open and check those events out. Stop Loss Congress event will be at St. Stephen's Church in D.C., and the event at MICA will be at MICA. So,
and do you have any upcoming albums that you'd like to share with us, for those that are looking?
Yeah, definitely check out. Keep looking at the MySpace page and on my website. My website is sonofnun.net, sonofnun.net, and MySpace is MySpace/SocialistMC, the two letters MNC. And basically, we're looking to release another album in around like May or so. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be powerful. Going to be strong, if I do say so myself.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to keep you in touch and let us know what's going on with you, son, because this is very important. We have to get the message out, and that's why we're here on the People Speak Radio, folks. And that's it for tonight. Tomorrow, February 27th, Tracy Barker, who alleges being sexually assaulted in Iraq while under the employment of Halliburton, will be our guest, with David Swanson from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time in the People Speak radio showroom. Next week on Tuesday, March 4th, I will be myself, Basma Farhat, will be interviewing the one and only Basma Farhat will be interviewing Senator James Aburizik, who is an incredible proponent of the Palestine issue. He is an Arab American senator, and I'm seriously looking forward to hearing from him, hearing his views on the events in the Middle East today. Thank you so much, Son of Nun, for being with us. It has been our honor.
Take care, Basma. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good night, everybody. We'll see you guys tomorrow night, folks. It's been swell.
By the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest, to the Gulf Stream water, yeah.